Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hiding in the Pews, Shining Light on Mental Illness in the Church by Steve Austin. Foreword by Robert W. Lee. Narrated by Adam Werner. Foreword. I don't know if this book is for you. Comforting words to start a foreword for a book, right? I say this because I want you to know that this book has the honesty that may make some listeners uncomfortable. Still, while this book may not be for you, I assure you that you most definitely need to listen to it. In 2016, I was admitted to Duke University Hospital for my bipolar disorder. I was a graduate student in the Duke Divinity School at the time, and one memory stays with me to this day. A chaplain resident who went to school with me was assigned to the psychiatric ward for the time I was hospitalized. After I was released and returned to school, the person would not even make eye contact with me. It was as if we shared some dark secret that needed to be kept between us so our budding ministries could continue without interference from each other. I remember finally walking up to her in the cafe and acknowledging the fact that we had seen each other under such circumstances. Here's the thing, though. I should never have needed to have that conversation about my taking up space in a psychiatric care facility. While she was trying to be kind and protect my human dignity and her position, the whole school knew, and I had talked about my experiences. What I'm getting at is simple and complex. I should not have to apologize for taking up space in this world. Frankly, too many times those with mental illness within the church are forced to explain away their pain, their hopes, their sadness, and even their joy. More dangerously, as you will hear in this book, some people will even have to reckon with their church communities, where others are demanding their illness be prayed away or chased out as if they need an exorcism. Let me be clear, the heart of God is far bigger than that. The church should follow God's lead. Steve Austin is an advocate for our big tent God, a God who is willing to embrace you at the height of mania or the depth of depression, a God who will quiet the fears of anxiety and instability, a God who will shift the weeping of depression to the joy of a new morning. Steve has come to know that God and shows us that this God is worth getting to know. We live in daunting times. But we have come to know, as Steve has, that this is not a time to shrink back from necessary conversations and difficult realities. We do not live in neat boxes. Instead, in our disarray, we find the heart of God. Because we are made in the image of God, God indeed knows the pain we are feeling and is willing to sit in the disarray with us, as a parent looks at a mess and wants to help a child instead of scolding. Don't be afraid of the mess of life, but don't let it define you, my friend Steve proclaims in this book. Don't be afraid to tell the good news that is no longer secret. Your God and guardian will indeed guide you, your church, and your community to wholeness, holiness, and healing. What a day that will be. The Reverend Robert W. Lee, pastor, activist, and author of Stained Glass Millennials, A Sin by Any Other Name, and The Pulpit and the Paper. Preface. Trigger warning, this book contains explicit discussion of trauma, mental illness, childhood sexual abuse, and suicidality. I cannot remember a time when I wasn't a regular church attendee, at the very minimum. I sang my first solo in our church's Christmas play before I entered kindergarten. I was a youth leader in high school, went on multiple short-term mission trips, spent 2 years in Bible school after high school, and served as a youth pastor or worship leader, or both, in various evangelical churches for the better part of a decade. And then, in 2012, I nearly died by suicide. This launched me on a journey, one of opening my eyes to the widespread problem of mental illness and how those suffering from it are treated in countless congregations. I began to wonder if my experiences, and the experiences of those like me, could have been prevented if mental illness had been a regular, normal part of our Christian conversation. If talks of mental health, therapy, suicide prevention, recovery from abuse, and other difficult issues had been normalized in church services and Sunday schools, would that have changed my entire story and experience? Would it have prevented me from ever attempting suicide? As it turns out, I'm not alone in my experiences with mental illness and the church. When I first shared my story via my blog in September of 2013, hundreds of comments, emails, and social media messages poured in from around the world. Other hurting Christians, who had spent years hiding in the pews and behind the pulpit, were suddenly feeling less alone by reading my blog. The stories strangers found the courage to share with me helped me feel less alone, too. The initial blog post, From Pastor to a Psych Ward, is the basis for the book you now are listening to, and the spark for my passion to cultivate church reform so that our local churches become safe places for all people, especially those who face stigma and shame due to illness, disability, race, gender, and sexuality. While my primary focus for the past several years has been on everyday Christians and spiritual misfits, this book is aimed specifically at church leaders, pastors, board members, and lay leaders. You are the ones who hold the primary responsibility for transforming church culture, and I want to partner with you to make that sacred revolution a success. I also want to mention that I spent the first 36 years of my life in the evangelical world. I was born a Southern Baptist, spent nearly 20 years in the Assemblies of God denomination, and worshipped with the Methodists for a couple of years before finally, in the past year, falling in love with my local Episcopal parish. So if my evangelical roots shine through in various places in this text, you'll understand why. However, I firmly believe that the principles and practices in this book can also serve mainline churches and other Christian traditions, because even if our labels are different, many of us know the desperation of feeling all alone while surrounded by a congregation of fellow believers. As you start this book, you'll notice that each chapter covers a topic or theme about mental illness in the church, including a practical application section to help guide leaders on a journey of transforming their church culture. Why? Because this kind of total overhaul begins from the inside out, or from the top down, and sometimes those of us on the top and on the inside need help taking the first steps toward that overhaul. You should know, I'm not a mental health professional, nor am I a researcher. But after surviving a suicide attempt, I became a vocal advocate for mental health, and I am passionate about this truth. Storytelling saves lives. As I prepared to write this manuscript, I surveyed 80 people, composed of current and former church leaders and current and former Christians, from a variety of denominations and congregations. I asked each of them the following questions. 1. Please describe your experience with the church. What caused or causes the church to feel like an unsafe place to share your story? 2. During your season of despair, did you feel seen by the church or like you had to hide? Please share the good, bad, or ugly. I'm looking for both positive and negative feedback. 3. How did that experience make you feel? In other words, what do you wish the church knew about the people hiding in their pews and or behind their pulpits? 4. What's one bit of advice you'd give church leadership to help us become a safer place to heal? 5. Is there anything else about your experience with the church that you'd like to share, especially if it could help the church better serve those who are hurting? Their pain came through in each response, several of which I share in this book. But in many, their hope for our churches to become genuine places of refuge was also loud and clear. Their responses deeply resonated with me because I, too, have had similar experiences. I have been wounded by churches due to their actions and inactions, and while I became outraged for a while, I have also spent years in therapy, working through my anger and pain. And it is now my hope that our church communities can become the first places people think of when they are looking for somewhere where they will be safe and have a sense of belonging. But we've got a long way to go, beloved. Let us therefore embark on this journey together. Introduction. Vulnerability can heal us. The church should become the place where the fullness of suffering is expressed in a safe environment. Liturgy, worship, small groups, and other aspects of church life should provide the safe place where the fullness of suffering can be set free. Sung Chan Ra, Prophetic Lament. I was a pastor when I nearly died by suicide. If you had to listen to that sentence a second time, I get it. Those words are pretty jarring to hear. At 29 years old, my life had reached a point where I felt there was no hope, so I tried to die in a hotel room with a Bible in my lap as I feverishly wrote my suicide notes. I prayed I would never wake up. Have you ever felt alone and misunderstood? Have you ever hidden parts of yourself from others, knowing you would be shamed or punished if you let yourself be seen? When you feel invisible while surrounded by people who are supposed to care for you, supposed to see you, it can be the worst feeling in the world. The experience is especially crushing when it happens inside a church. You read, "Come as you are," on the sign out front, and you notice the cross, the universal symbol for second chances, at the top of the steeple. But the actions of those inside don't match the message on the marquee. In the amount of time it takes for the average person to hear the first paragraph of this book, somewhere in the world, one person has died by suicide. That's right. According to the World Health Organization, someone around the world dies by suicide every 40 seconds. I don't mean to be morbid, but another person just died. Sure, that seems awfully dark for the opening of a book on hope and a guide for church leaders, but the reason I sat down to write another book on life at the intersection of faith and mental health is because 1 in 5 people in every church and around the globe live with mental illness. And for the one person who dies by suicide every 40 seconds, another 25 people attempt. I care passionately about this topic because in early 2017, my world was rocked by the death of my precious friend, Amy Bluell, founder of Project Semicolon. Amy was the first Christian leader I knew to die by suicide. Unfortunately, she wasn't the last. I'll never forget the text I got near the end of August 2018. A friend letting me know that Pastor Andrew Steckelein was on life support after a suicide attempt inside the very church where he pastored. I was on my way home from an event in Nashville when I got the news that Andrew had died. I didn't know him personally, but the story hit really close to home. My reaction was heartache. Heartache for him, sorrow for his family, and grief for all those who don't understand the living hell he was walking through. A few months later, another California megachurch mourned the loss of their pastor, Jim Howard. And in September of 2019, the world said another premature goodbye to Pastor Jared Wilson, a vocal mental health advocate and megachurch pastor. In each of these situations, I had to process my survivor's guilt. It should have been me, I said after the news broke of each one of these bright lights being snuffed out too soon. It could have been me. It nearly was me. God, what are we going to do? I've written this book for the church, and especially for its leaders, pastors, lay leaders, ministry staff, you name it. I love the body of Christ, and I know the powerful force for healing that churches can be in the lives of sufferers. I've seen it. Trouble is, I've also seen the powerful force for destruction and shame we can be, even without meaning to. Nowhere is this more evident than in how churches talk about, respond to, and treat people with mental illness. I've seen well-meaning, earnest believers say and do things to people suffering from mental illness that were the equivalent of kicking someone who's down, and these believers had no idea they were making an already hard situation far worse. They genuinely thought they were helping, or they didn't have a clue how to handle the situation and were just doing the best they knew. But they still did damage. Such damage infliction is true of regular churchgoers, but it's particularly true of pastors and lay leaders, or anyone serving in ministry who has power and influence over what that church's culture is like. What pastors preach from the pulpit, or, more tellingly, what they keep deafeningly silent about, has a profound impact on the most at risk among us. And not only pastors bear this responsibility, we all do. The small group leader who follows up someone's uncomfortable admission with an abrupt subject change is being a force for shame, knowingly or not. The board member who votes with the majority to fire a mentally ill pastor is helping keep stigma alive. In order for our churches to become safe places for everyone, no matter their history, we must all do our part to include each other. So that's why I have addressed this book primarily to pastors and leaders, even though Christians in all parts of the church will benefit from it. Those who have mental illness, some of whom might be pastors themselves, like I was, may derive comfort in this book as they learn they are not alone. Those who know someone with mental illness will gain wisdom about how to be a safe presence, not a harmful one. But most importantly, those who hold the most power in church communities will be challenged and equipped to use their power well and to transform their church communities into places of healing where the suffering are safe to be vulnerable. Healing cannot happen when people don't feel safe to show their weakness, struggle, uncertainty, and pain. If people have to hide in the pews to protect themselves from judgment, shame, or ostracization, the church becomes a force of destruction, keeping the children of God trapped in bondage, suffering in silence. But when a church champions vulnerability and establishes safety within its walls, especially for those who are suffering, the healing power of God can set the captives free. I know. I've seen it. It's possible, and it's powerful, and it's worth the work. Even though pastors and leaders have the biggest responsibility to start and uphold this work in their congregations, we all play an important role in it, and we can all benefit from it. So many of us Christians feel completely overwhelmed by life and are deathly afraid to tell the truth about our wounds and ask for help. Countless congregants are drowning beneath the shame-filled lies they believe about God and themselves, and they are desperate for someone to say, "Me too," and provide a way out of the foggy darkness. Because of my own experience with ministry and mental health, I know there are also innumerable pastors who struggle with mental illness, needing to hide behind the pulpit, rather than taking the risk of being seen as real humans, with actual needs and wounds. If you're one of those, I see you. I am you, and we will heal together. Or maybe you're someone adjacent to mental illness, rather than suffering from it yourself. Maybe you're a parent, terrified and clueless about how to treat your teenager once you find out she's been cutting herself. Maybe you're a member of your church board, sitting in an emergency meeting the week after your up-and-coming pastor reluctantly revealed he's on antidepressants and seeing a psychiatrist, and someone just made a motion to fire him. Maybe you're chatting with a friend after church who is whispering in shocked tones about so-and-so's wife, who was admitted to an inpatient unit, and we all thought she was such a good Christian. No matter how much power you hold, in those moments, we each have a choice. What do you do? What do you say? Will you be a force for healing or a force for shame? My name is Steve Austin. I was a pastor when I almost died by suicide, and my passion is to help all of us, from pastors and leaders to regular church members, learn how to make the body of Christ into the healing force it is uniquely positioned to be. None of us want to make suffering people hurt worse. None of us want to make people feel desperate, isolated, despairing, and trapped in pain. And none of us want to be the ones who are trapped and desperate either. We don't trap people this way on purpose. We are usually doing the best we know how to do. And that's where I'd like to help. Whether you're a church leader who wants to help build safe spaces for those who are hurting, or you're a congregant who wants to help make that vision a reality, I'm so glad you're here. Whether you're in seminary, working as a Christian counselor, or leading a retreat center, if you want to help your church become a sanctuary for those who are desperate to be seen, welcome. In this book, you won't find sanitized advice from someone who hasn't been traumatized. Instead, you'll discover authentic perspectives from a pastor who nearly died by suicide. The message behind this book is my life's work. So spend a little time with me, because it's my goal to offer you tangible steps toward successfully creating a safe space for those with mental illness, even when that includes the pastor. By the way, since you started listening to this book, 9 people have died by suicide. The church's greatest sales pitch. The church's great sales pitch is often our biggest lie. We say, "Come as you are," but we fail to tell prospective congregants the rest of our story. And then the real work starts. There's confirmation and classes for new members. You'll need to get baptized by both water and the Holy Spirit. And before long, you will need to choose which committees you'd like to join ASAP. The message comes through unmistakably. It's okay for the newcomers to be themselves or to have a bad day. They're still the new kids on the block. But those who have chosen the life of a Christ follower should know better. No more free rides. The mountain of expectations and responsibilities makes it clear that those who want to belong at church had better match our pace. Christians have work to do. We don't have time for bad days. We Christians have created a church leadership culture more concerned with the external demands of running an organization than the work of grace in our internal lives, and that trickles down to the congregants. I hurt for those who are sitting in the pews or standing behind the pulpit, baptized as teenagers or sprinkled as infants, and are now barely holding on. I am crushed for the Christians seeking sanctuary on Sunday morning, who instead find one more set of obligations they must meet. There are so many of us who need a holy place to come, lay down our burdens, and simply rest. But so often, resting in church isn't that simple. Most folks who have spent time as people who are mentally ill in church can tell the real story. What it's like on the ground, and what our church cultures do to those on the margins. A friend described to me a season in her life when her most faithful act was pulling into the church parking lot. She had the courage only to show up for one more week. If any other expectations had been placed on her during that season, her faith would have crumbled to dust. I think of the ministry school student my wife mentored, who was so depressed that she called the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline after Sunday service. Why? Because she couldn't handle one more pat response to her pain. She couldn't stomach being told to take every thought captive another day. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5, English Standard Version. A scriptural platitude commonly cited as a fix for mental illness. She'd spent her entire life in church, but was now feeling more isolated and invisible than ever. Or how about my friend, who was coerced into stopping her crazy pills, as her church so lovingly called them. A week later, she was in the ICU and then in the psych ward because her church chose not to embrace her with the compassion of Jesus. Rather than calling in the professionals to help this fragile woman in their congregation, they guilted her into making a dangerous and nearly deadly decision, all because church leaders too often speak out about things they don't understand, like what people who are mentally ill should do to manage their condition. And why? Because we view therapy and medication as being in competition with the gospel? How bizarre! Imagine if the pastor or anyone in our congregation was run over by an 18-wheeler while out for a bike ride. They would likely spend months in therapy and a long time, perhaps a lifetime, on some powerful medication. My guess is we'd never judge them or rush their recovery. They've just been run over by a truck. Well, friend, for those living with mental illness, our brains often have endured the mental equivalent of being run over by a truck. Sometimes we need powerful medication, plus therapy, often for a lifetime. I long for the day when local congregations say, "Just show up." I long for those of us in the church to echo the words of Christ, who said, "Come to me, tired ones. Come to me in your dysfunction. Come to me with your disappointment. Come to me and bring your exhaustion with you. Come to me without production or pretense and rest. This world weighs heavily on us all, mentally ill or not, and we are in dire need of rest. The church is called to echo the heart of Jesus to those who have been desperately trying to win the love of God, to earn their salvation, and to gain the approval of church elders. Earnestly, tenderly, Jesus is calling for the church to demonstrate grace. People over dogma. In churches, we talk a pretty good grace game, but we struggle to truly put grace into practice. I experienced a religion that does more to push people away than to draw all people to Jesus. I nearly died by suicide because I had bought into the lie of performance-based Christianity, the idea that being a good Christian means maintaining behaviors, speech, dogma, and appearances that meet other Christians' approval, and I hated myself for constantly falling short. In many congregations, leaders have created a culture of Christianity more obsessed with dogma than with grace for real people. People with real struggles, who are feeling real pain and dealing with real messes. The very people who most need a safe community are scared to enter our sanitized sanctuaries, lay down their burdens, and rest. The sad reality is that hurting people are hiding in our pews, and many don't dare even to enter a church. Pain and suffering and shame and secrets are among us. But I believe that in the midst of all the mess, we have great potential to build a community Jesus would be proud of, one where the redeemed recognize we are all ragamuffins and the outcasts feel at home, where we encourage one another, support one another, and look for the best in each person we encounter. Because, as Paul Young, author of The Shack, once told me, if we don't have a theology that embraces mental illness, our God is too small. So what do we do? I believe if the church is ever truly going to become the hope for the world that Jesus offered in his ministry, we need the courage to be vulnerable in a safe community. But wait, Steve, you say, to find the courage to be vulnerable, we first need our churches to be safe communities. You're right. That's why pastors and leaders need to make the first move. Otherwise, congregants cannot safely do so. Church leaders have a direct call to become vulnerable themselves and to establish an atmosphere of safety where vulnerability does not meet with ostracism, punishment, or shaming. The church needs to become a place of true belonging. But as Brené Brown says, true belonging only happens when we present our authentic, imperfect selves to the world. After writing From Pastor to a Psych Ward in 2016, I started coaching pastors across the country. Through these coaching relationships, a theme became clear. Pastors feel ill-prepared to address the issue of mental health in the church, and many of them are deathly afraid to let their own struggles be seen. For those of us with mental illness, the church can sometimes feel tone-deaf and unkind. We often hide in the shadows for fear of being thought of as less than full Christians. Meanwhile, we continue to stubbornly white-knuckle our commitment to the community of believers, hoping to one day be accepted just as we are. But what would happen if church leaders did the work to transform our faith communities into places where people are safe to share honestly about our struggles, dysfunctions, doubts, and wounds? What freedom might both leaders and congregants feel if we put performance-based Christianity aside? What might it feel like to not just build a brand around transparency, but actually be transparent with one another and with God? What if, as our leaders pulled up shame-based expectations by the roots, we didn't have to pretend any longer? What if the church was a place of true belonging? A hospital for the hurting. Anyone who has spent time in a good psych ward would love for our churches to look a little more like good inpatient units. Now, before you close this book, let me explain. I know when we hear psych ward, we tend to picture something like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, with dark hallways, flickering lights, psych patients in straitjackets, who all behave like serial killers, and mean, angry nurses chased.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?